So coming back to what you were saying about people that have a goal or they focus on the outcome, you know, having a target, I think is important because it focuses the mind. However, when people do things and they control the outcome, and this is based on the ancient Sanskrit teachings as well, that when they just focus on getting to that, you know, to that outcome and not releasing, for example, if say like, you know, in my case, doing quite a few, you know, consultations this week, you know, met about 20 people and trying to squeeze them in. It can take a lot of time and energy and effort from other things that I can be working on, but I don't attach to whether that customer or that person becomes a client or does not become a client, whether they buy from me or they don't buy from me. I focus more on helping them and being of service to them and really giving 100% of my best. And that's something I live by also, that when people are starting to listen to these shows, they're going to be like, oh, well, what do I do when they're stuck? Well, when we give 100% of our best at all times, and you know, some days that's going to change. Some days were, you know, like this morning, my energy is a little bit lower. I'm a little more tired. Yesterday I wasn't. You know, a couple days ago I was. So if we can just give 100% of our best where we're at, and that'll vary by each day, it'll allow us to break the pattern of trying to take and trying to get something. And so I'm really, really happy that you're sharing that, and I want to spend some more time, you know, for us talking about it and explaining more and more about it, because I don't think the average person will understand or get that. They just focus on the money aspect, you know what I mean? And just trying to get someone and not showing that they really care for someone, you know what I mean?
I do.
And then one other thing is, I'm in the middle of negotiating with a client who's been a long-term client who's on the other end now. He's worked with me for almost, I think, about a year and a half, and he's seen tremendous success. He wants what I have to offer, and I think I've had six different conversations with him, about 6 hours of going through back and forth what I can do for him. He keeps on saying yes, he wants it and he's ready to go. And then he'll email me after a little while, and this has been going on for about a month, and I'm not pressuring or pushing him. And then he'll try to like lowball me. Like, if I were to be honest, and I tell everyone this, I've invested 100,000 hours or more, and I've done a lot of work, and I don't think anyone's gonna really care. But I'm just saying, on my part, and the financial overhead was over $500,000. And my life, you know, it's been more than a decade of my life that I've developed what I'm able to share now so quickly and easily. Investing in learning, investing in my education, investing in my coaches, investing in success principles, and now living them and showing the results. So when someone comes and they don't want to, it's not maybe that they don't value us, maybe it's just the fact that they don't kind of have the financial means. Like, how would you handle that? That's something I, you know, in the sales process, I struggle with, because I, coming from the, you know, years of being an accountant, it was really simple. It's like you'd agree on a rate, you know, we'd go in there, and then the client would just cut us a check when, you know, or cut me a check when I was done, or put it on receivables. But there was no skill in terms of learning to negotiate and trying to figure things out. So it makes it harder when I'm trying to give so much. I can only give, you know, so many hours a week before the overhead piles up, and then, you know, cash still has to flow into a business. So if you have some experience or knowledge there that can help either myself or my audience to understand when we hit these very, very challenging potential clients that would be great clients, it's just in that process. How do we make that easier without trying to sound, how do I say, trying to go for the, you know, go for the check, you know what I mean? Because it's been six different negotiations with him, and even this morning he emailed me, and he just like agrees to everything, and then he wants like 6 months of my time, not 3 months, and he wants half the price of 3 months. And I'm like, you know, how do you respond to someone like that wants to just take advantage, you know?
I don't know the exact specifics of this man and this transaction or potential transaction. I think one of the first things you do whenever you have what might be viewed as a disagreement on terms or price or whatever is to not make it personal, because it's hard, because you're talking about your time, which is you, and he's placing a value on that, and obviously you're a person and you want to have a high value on yourself, but you can't take it personal, because I know people like that, and primarily they're men, but sometimes they're women. But in order for them to feel good about themselves, they have to think that they have a deal. They have to think that they're getting a good deal. They have to think that they win, because to them, it's about winning and losing and levels of winning and levels of losing. So the first thing is, I would think, is just not take it personal. Just realize it's his thing. And then, although I don't know if I could tell you exactly how to overcome this, but I think always a series of questions. If you can figure out what makes him tick and where he sees the value, and but not just the value of your time, because you want 6 months instead of 3 months, and you know, half the price instead of the agreed upon price, but also the value of what he's going to get. So if you can focus on, if you can, not you focus on it, but if you can help him to focus on the value that's going to be received and all benefits that are going to be received, then whether he pays X number of dollars or half a number of dollars, half that amount, it's still, he's getting the benefit. So he's focusing on cost, and you want to somehow get him to focus on benefits and the value of those benefits. And you do that through asking questions, because you can't change somebody. I don't believe you can change them by talking to them. You can only change them from the inside out. This is what I call spiritual selling. It's selling from the inside out. And the reason I used to teach asking questions, and when I used to teach sales, it was always about leading with questions. Back then it was different, because I was trying to lead them to some decision. But it's the same type of thing. I used to have an exercise that I would do with my employees, and I said, okay, if I ask you a question, what do you do? Normally they would say, well, we would answer the question. And then I would say, what do you do before you answer the question? Their answer was always in. Sometimes it was right away, sometimes it took a second, but they were thinking. And then they realized that's what they do. They're thinking before they answer. So you have to construct a series of questions that are designed to influence the thinking of the person that you're involved with this discussion, because it's the thinking, the thoughts come from inside of them. That's something in their mind. So if they think it, it's much more powerful than if you say it. And some people, if you say it, they're naturally going to try to defend it or contradict it or attack it. But if the thought comes up from the inside of them, it's a whole different, 180 degrees different. So one thing, the two things I would do is not take it personal. You know, it's not about you. It's about them and, you know, what makes them tick. And two, come up with some kind of questions, not questions designed to get to an outcome, but a question designed to influence thinking. And then you know that that thinking would obviously support the value that you believe your worth and your time and your programs are worth.
That's really, really good and funny you're saying that, because I don't really ask a lot of questions. I just don't know how. I don't know exactly what questions to ask, or, you know, I tend to be very intuitive, very psychic, so the processing is happening. I communicate pretty fast, so that tells me that's an area that I have to improve on, I have to work on, I have to get better at. Or I have to get someone who has mastered that to help me to walk through that process. Like I said, this is a great client. You know, I've known him for quite some time. And I realized that he always talks about battles and winning and, you know, it's the warrior athlete archetype. And I felt that. I felt that if he intentionally, after each negotiation, tries his very best to get the upper hand, but I didn't realize that he was competing and battling, and I had no idea about the psychology of somebody, And that goes to what you were talking about is where sales can be manipulating or people could be using it. And I could see what you mean, because if someone knew what you knew and had the knowledge that you have or the ability to get inside someone's head like you do, you know, it's like me when I'm doing an intuitive session or a coaching session or a psychic or a reading, I can actually see a person's past, present, future. I can see the outcome of everything in their life. I can tell if they're going to make money, if they're not, if they're going to be successful or they're going to fail. That's a lot of power over someone's life in a conversation that I always pray to God that, you know, keep me humble, you know, let thy will be done, not my will, you know, guide my mind so that, you know, what I need today is to accomplish his will and that it's provided to me. But I know that there are either mystics or gurus or whoever or people, you know, are frauds or people that even in the accounting, there's more financial fraud and account, you know, accounting related embezzlement and stealing than there is in the psychic world. And I always talk about that in the intuitive world. Yeah, there's some, you know, people out there that lie about things and they're not truthful, and so it gives the spiritual world a bad name. But the minute that happens in society, there's a whole bunch of mudslinging. Oh, it's those crazy woo-woo-ites, those crazy spiritual people, those crazy, you know, crazy psychics. But in the meantime, the financial world, we all know, is filled with, you know, a lot of thieves, liars, and my gosh, I had a couple of clients back in the East Coast, more so than the West Coast, where there was so much fraud and stealing that I would come in and have to clean up the accounting and the books and find out how much money was really taken from a business. And as I was doing that, I was like, why don't we have so much mudslinging on the in the accounting world? When the Arthur Andersen, Enron, Madoff, the mortgage crisis, the banking crisis, the securities crisis, my God, you name it, every couple of years, it comes out in the media that there's more and more and more evil, fraudulent people out there. The bailouts, you know, going back to the savings and loans crisis. Oh, every few years there's another big one that comes out where we find that there's these moguls that are just stealing and ripping people off. And that world never really gets a bad rap in that sense because it's protected by, you know, the AICPA and you know, a lot of professional bodies. And so they just blame it on one company or one thing and then they move on. But they never get to the core of the manipulation of, not just for me, it's not the sales because it's not my strength, but the manipulation in the financial world. And one of the reasons why I didn't want to work for the largest accounting firm in the world, which I love my job, I love the people I work for, I loved a lot of the perks, but I didn't feel that working for a corporate environment that was with companies that I knew, for example, there were reinsurance companies that made over 3,000% of profits when September 11th happened because the companies in Manhattan didn't have a terrorist or clause in their insurance policies. And so, I mean, if a big building in Manhattan worth millions and millions of dollars and we have a national crisis with 9/11 and they're profiting tremendously. So there's a lot that I guess you and I connecting together is bringing up on that one topic of manipulation and what I've seen. And so my dream is to build clean money, pure money, and in service of humanity that is going to be used to fund what I call the Jevolution Foundation, 10% of which I really want to help causes like human trafficking, educating entrepreneurs, children, orphans. Right now I support about 5 different orphanages because my mom died when I was 6. I was very passionate about that. Really bringing in the soul of some of the ancient teachings talk about that, like money that is made with, like you said, with manipulation or fraud or negative intent, when that money is created, it actually brings out suffering. And that suffering comes back to the people and the people, the souls that are creating it. So in the long run, they either lose it or something happens. It doesn't, you know, it doesn't stay with them. So pure money, on the other hand, is the first and the highest purpose of human life, and I talk about this a lot in cognitive accounting, is to find God or to find self-realization or to find that connection back to spirit. That is our first and highest objective. That's why I created Jeevolution, which Jeev means the soul or the process of becoming healthy. Jivan Mukta is a human being that is so enlightened that they can choose to come back to Earth as a human to serve and help humanity. However, they're not forced into karmic relationships with, you know, family or friends or whatever. They don't come here to the, they're basically like angels. You know, in the West, we would say they're an angel. They come here to just serve and help humanity and do God's work. And then they go back and they can choose whether they want to stay in the higher astral world for however long. And then they come back again and do their job again. And then they can, you know, until they're fully realized beings that merges into the one consciousness of God. So that is the highest existence of a human being. The second highest existence of a human being is to make money that is in alignment with purity. Money that didn't come from drugs or gambling or stealing or lying or manipulation or cheating. But I'll tell you one thing. I've been working on pure money for so long, and it's not easy in a world where people, you know, like this client of mine probably has over probably $1 million saved, and for you know, for in his 401k and his retirement. So it's not like he doesn't have money. I know that his overhead on a monthly basis is probably half of what I'm asking him to compensate me for months. And knowing that we live in San Diego, where you know you have to mortgage your wedding ring out here to survive in a lot of ways, they know what it costs to live here. They still try to, it's kind of like they go just below the price point instead of just accepting that price point. It's the manipulation, I think, on both sides, you know, where the, you know, if we're talking about that topic, I think it's the, since you brought it up, the marketing, the advertising, and the sales, I have seen, I can't say one or two, I think I've seen dozens and dozens and dozens of businesses fail because they don't understand advertising, they don't understand marketing, they don't understand their message, they don't understand communicating with the customer, and at the same time, they don't invest in that and they don't put it. So I guess I'm not trying to convince you, but I think that your value may be a lot higher than you have than you anticipated getting on this call. And what you can really do for someone, like I teach a lot of business success and, you know, principles for success and financial planning and all of that and coming up with a game plan. But at the same time, it's the base of it is spiritual. So it's spiritual in business. I can't help but think about spiritual in sales, and what a great conversation that would be. That would be for me a whole new language. Like Zig Ziglar is no longer with us, and Zig was really good. Some of the greats out there. But to have clean sales, you know, that's why salespeople are known as being sleazy. You know what I mean? So, and it's all associated with yuckiness and ickiness, and nobody wants to deal with a sleazy salesman and things like that. But I think that the time I've met some really amazing people like you recently that want to bring that type of, purity and non-manipulativeness and transparency, openness, and honesty to the process. So I know, something to think about, right?
Yep, that's right. You used the word purity and pure quite a few times, and it, as you did, I was smiling because that's what I named my ministry, is Pure Faith Ministries. And then when I think about purity, whether it's sales or whatever, it's like taking away all the things that can contaminate or hinder or restrict something. And I think that with me, I mean, we were talking about the purity of a sales process. Obviously, there's things there. But with my ministry and with pure faith, there are things in the world that come in and kind of limit or squeeze or restrict your faith and your spiritual growth. And if you can take those away, then you do have the purity, the pure faith, the faith that can be creative, the faith that is love, that not can be, but will be creative, and the faith that's loving and compassionate and connecting.